Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Coming up, Andrew Smith presents Ask a Teacher. We also have Words and Their Stories from Anna Mateo. And we close the show with an American story. But first,
Americans are showing more interest in owning unusually small cows, goats, donkeys, and other small farm animals. These animals are cute. They require less food and space. And they might even help cut the grass. People who farm for fun are known as hobby farmers. They are looking for easy-to-raise farm animals. Some just like the idea of having a little pig or a small sheep as a pet. The word for something that is unusually small is miniature. Animal breeders say sales of these little farm animals have grown since the COVID-19 pandemic. At that time, more people started raising chickens at home for fun and fresh eggs. Like chickens, mini farm animals appeal to beginners who want to try a rural lifestyle. Brian Gazda has a small farm in the western state of Idaho. He runs a YouTube channel called Hobby Farm Guys with two friends. Gazda said, "A lot of people do not have a large piece of land, but if they have a small area, they can keep a miniature cow or a few miniature goats." Martin Fish works for Tractor Supply Company. He said social media has brought attention to mini farm animals. But Fish thinks their popularity also shows a natural path among customers who started out by raising a few chickens. They're seen as part of the extended family, Fish said. Some owners of mini farm animals turn their hobbies into money-making activities. They show the animals to visitors, breed animals, and write about their farming experiences. But newcomers to these activities need to weigh the pros and cons, or the good and bad effects of hobby farming, Gazda and other hobby farmers said. Among the problems is the rising cost of miniature farm animals. While they are cute, they can also be aggressive. Brittany Snow is a high school English teacher in Florida who owns several small Nigerian dwarf goats. She dreamed of living on a farm. Her family recently moved to a rural area. 32-year-old Snow started with four Nigerian dwarf goats. Snow expected them to produce milk right away, but she learned that is not the case. Angelia Alden is a business operations manager for the Miniature Dairy Goat Association. She said many people who buy mini goats sell them after a few years because their care presents problems and costs they did not expect. Rising animal feed costs can be one problem, as is finding farm animal medical care. The mini farm animals can also be heavy. Some of the popular miniature animals on social media are cows that can weigh between 220 and 270 kilograms. 28-year-old Allie Sein started her own business breeding and selling mini cows in 2020. Social media videos showing some of her mini cows have gotten millions of views. Last year, she sold about 190 young cows. Each animal sold for between $2,000 and $30,000. "Everything just skyrocketed," Sein said. Kim Furches owns a farm with her husband Ken in West Jefferson, North Carolina. She has found similar success. Furches said they bred mini donkeys for about 20 years. Before the pandemic, they would usually sell about 8 donkeys per year for less than $1,000 each. They now sell about 20 per year. The last mini donkey sold for $7,500, Furches said. Earlier this year, Jamie Campion, who is 41, and her husband Jeff bought 2 Southdown baby doll sheep from a local breeder near their home in Thompson Station, Tennessee. The animals cost $800 each. Jamie Campion said the sheep have become good at keeping their grass short. But more often, the sheep give her joy as would other pets. Once she took them for a walk in the snow. They just followed right behind, she said. There's a whole sheep and shepherd relationship. I'm Jill Robbins.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Simona in China about the words combine and integrate. Dear teacher, hi, I have a question. What is the difference between combine and integrate? Thank you. Thank you for writing to us, Simona. I'm happy to answer this question. Combine and integrate are similar in meaning, but there are some small differences in usage. The word combine is in our Learning English word book. We define it as a verb meaning to mix or bring together. Integrate is not in our word book. Merriam-Webster's dictionary says the word means to unite or form into a whole. Now, let's look at the prefixes that begin each word. Combine begins with the prefix co, such as in the word co-pilot. This prefix means with. Integrate begins with the prefix inter, but with the letter R removed. This means among or between, as in the word international. The prefix co generally gives the sense of joining two or more things together. For example, oxygen combines with hydrogen to make water. However, combine can also mean to mix things together, such as mixing the ingredients in a recipe. Integrate can be used that same way. But it also can mean to add something to one or more other things and mix them so well that they fully unite. For example, a school might try to integrate healthy foods into its school meals. Or a jazz group might try to integrate elements of country music into their songs. Notice that we use the preposition into with the word integrate. We say that we integrate X into Y. Here is another example.
New technologies can quickly become integrated into our lives.
But when we use combine, we use the preposition with. We say we combine X with Y, or combine X and Y, as in these examples.
The management team is trying to combine youth with experience. When you combine talent and hard work, you will see positive results.
integrate can sometimes give a sense of deeper connection among two or more things than combine. To see this, consider the word integral. This word comes from the same root as integrate. We say that something is an integral part of something else. This means that the things are deeply connected or important to each other. For example,
bicycles are an integral part of traffic and culture in the Netherlands. Fishing is an integral part of the coastal economy.
Last, both the words integral and integration have technical meanings in calculus, a field of mathematics. For our readers and listeners, do you have a question about American English? You can ask about many different areas of English, such as speaking, listening, culture, and more. Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On today's show, we talk about some expressions that deal with an important device in our lives, our phones. With a smartphone, we can connect to the world. In fact, we can say, smartphones give us the world at our fingertips. Needless to say, we use our phones to stay in contact with the people in our lives. We use them to reach out to our friends, family, neighbors, and coworkers. So when we tell someone that we are just a phone call away, what we are really telling them is that we are available. We are there for them. We often use this expression to offer help to someone who is in a difficult situation or just in need of a friendly voice. For example, let's say my friend is having a hard time with an advanced English course. The assignments are difficult, the material is hard to understand, and his teacher has not been answering his emails. I can say to him, "Look, if you ever need help, I'm just a phone call away. Call anytime." It's good to be available to some people some of the time, but maybe not all the time. We all have someone in our lives who contacts us too much. They may blow up our phones with a flood of calls and text messages. When your phone blows up, someone is trying to contact you repeatedly. Here's an example. Let's say your neighbor, Jana, is having trouble with another neighbor, Jake, and you are in the middle of it. They are both blowing up your phone with calls and texts about their disagreement. You can tell them, "Hold the phone. Just stop. Talk to each other and work out your problems, because I've had enough." The expression, "hold the phone," is a way to say wait or stop. We use it when we hear something surprising or when we have had enough of a situation. And it doesn't have to be about phone calls or texts. For example, let's say a friend tells me that my favorite singer is coming to town. I can't believe it. So I can say, "Hold the phone. Are you serious?" It's like saying, "Hold on a minute." Now let's go back to your arguing neighbors, Jana and Jake. Let's say they take your advice. They are willing to work out their problems. They try to call each other, but keep missing each other's calls. First, Jana calls Jake, but he isn't available. Then Jake calls her back, but now Jana isn't available. They play phone tag like this for days, until they finally speak to each other. Tag is a child's game. One person is it and must chase and tag or touch the other children. So phone tag is when two people try to contact each other, but their calls go unanswered. At least Jake and Jana are trying to work out their problems. When it comes to keeping relationships happy in the neighborhood, they are not phoning it in. When we phone it in, we don't try our best at something. We don't give our best efforts. For example, some people who lose interest in their jobs might start phoning it in. They stop trying and do not do their best work. That's not the case with us here at VOA Learning English. We are not phoning it in. We work hard every day to bring you new English learning content. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
We just heard Words and Their Stories from Ana Mateo, who discussed some phrases linked to a very popular device around the world, the phone. Welcome to the show, Ana.
Hi there, Katie. I'm happy to be here.
So, which phone expressions did you write about?
I talked about having someone blow up your phone.
Which means they call or text a lot.
That's right. And then I talked about the expression, hold the phone. This basically means, wait, stop.
I think that expression might be a little older.
I would agree with that. But we still use it, and listeners may still hear it. The next expression I talked about is to phone it in, which means you don't give something your best effort. You don't try very hard.
I really like the expression, to be a phone call away. It lets someone know we are available.
That's right, and we often use it to show someone we care. It's the same as saying, I'm here for you. Just call, and I'll be there.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Katie. And remember, if you ever need help with your podcast, I'm just a phone call away.
I'll keep that in mind, Ana. Thanks for all the info.
The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. Part 1.
Paris. It was in Paris during the summer of 1840. There and then, I met a strange and interesting young man named Auguste Dupin. Dupin was the last member of a well-known family, a family that had once been rich and famous. Auguste Dupin, however, was far from rich. He cared little about money. He had enough to buy necessities and a few books. That was all, just books. With books, he was happy. In fact, we first met in an old bookstore. A few more chance meetings at such stores followed. Soon, we began to talk. I was deeply interested in the family history, he told me. I was surprised, too, at how much and how widely he had read. More important, the force of his busy mind was like a bright light in my soul. I felt that the friendship of such a man would be for me riches without price. So I told him how I felt and asked him to come live with me. He would enjoy using my many fine books, and I would have the pleasure of company, for I was not happy alone. We passed the days reading, writing, and talking. But Dupin was a lover of the night, so often we walked the streets of Paris after dark. I soon noticed that Dupin had a special way of understanding people. Using it gave him great pleasure. He told me once, with a soft laugh, that he could see through the windows that most men have over their hearts. He could look into their souls. Then he surprised me by telling what he knew about my own soul. He knew things about me that I had thought only I could possibly know. At these times, he acted cold and emotionally distant. His eyes looked empty and far away. His voice became high and nervous. At such times, it seemed to me that I saw not just Dupin, but two Dupins. One who coldly put things together, and another who just as coldly took them apart. One night, we were walking down one of Paris's long, dirty streets. We were quiet, both busy with our own thoughts. But suddenly, Dupin spoke.
"You're right,"
he said.
"He is a very little fellow, that's true, and he would be more successful if he acted in lighter, less serious plays."
"Yes, there can be no doubt of that," I said. At first, I saw nothing strange in this. Dupin had agreed with me. This, of course, seemed to me quite natural. A few moments passed. Then it hit me. Dupin had not agreed with something I had said. He had agreed directly with my thoughts. I had not spoken a word. Dupin had read my mind. I stopped walking. "Dupin," I said, "Dupin, I don't understand. How could you know that I was thinking of..." Here I stopped speaking. If he really had heard my thoughts, he would have to prove it. And he did. He said,
"How did I know you were thinking of Shanti? You were thinking that Shanti is too small for the plays in which he acts."
"That is indeed what I was thinking. But tell me, in heaven's name, how did you know?"
"It was the fruit seller."
"Fruit seller?"
"I mean the man who bumped into you as we entered the street, maybe 15 minutes ago."
"Oh, yes, I remember now. A fruit seller with a large basket of apples bumped into me. But what does that have to do with you knowing I was thinking of Shanti?"
"I will explain. Listen closely now. Let us follow your thoughts from the fruit seller to the stage actor, Shanti. Those thoughts must have gone like this. Fruit seller to cobblestones, cobblestones to stereotomy, stereotomy to Epicurus, to Orion, and then to Shanti."
He continued,
"As we turned onto this street, the fruit seller bumped you. You stepped on some uneven cobblestones. I could see that it hurt your foot. You spoke a few angry words to yourself, and continued walking. But you kept looking at the cobblestones in the street, so I knew you were thinking of them. Then we came to a small street where they are putting down new street stones. Here your face became brighter. You were looking at these more even stones, and your lips moved. I was sure they formed the word stereotomy, which is the name for how these new stones are cut. Stereotomy takes a large block and divides it evenly into smaller pieces. You will remember that we read about it in the newspaper only yesterday. I thought that the word stereotomy must make you think of the old Greek writer and thinker Epicurus. His ideas are also about dividing objects into smaller and smaller pieces called atoms. He argued that the world and everything else are made of these atoms. You and I were talking about Epicurus and his ideas, his atoms, recently. We were talking about how much those old ideas are like today's scientific study of the planets and stars. So I felt sure that now, as we walked, you would look up to the sky. And you did. I looked also at the sky. I saw that the group of stars we call Orion is very bright and clear tonight. I knew you would notice this and that you would think about the name Orion. Now keep listening carefully. Only yesterday, in the newspaper, there was a report about the actor Shanti. The critic did not praise him, and he used a Latin saying that had also been used to describe Orion. So I knew you would put together the two ideas of Orion and Shanti. I saw you smile, remembering the article and the mean words in it. Then I saw you straighten up, as tall as you could make yourself. I was sure you were thinking of Shanti's size, and especially his height. He is small, he is short, and so I spoke, saying that he is indeed a very little man, this Shanti, and he would be more successful if he acted in lighter, less serious plays.
I cannot say I was surprised by what Dupin had just reported. My reaction was much bigger than just surprise. I was astonished. Dupin was right as he could be. Those were, in fact, my thoughts, my unspoken thoughts, as my mind moved from one thought to the next. But if I was astonished by this, I would soon be more than astonished. One morning, this strangely interesting man showed me once again his unusual reasoning power. We heard that an old woman had been killed by unknown persons. The killer, or killers, had cut her head off and escaped into the night. Who was this killer? This murderer? The police had no answer. They had looked everywhere and found nothing that helped them. They did not know what to do next. And so they did nothing. But not Dupin. He knew what to do. That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.